grateful to be here with you all. For those of you that have seen me speak before, you're probably aware that my faith and my spiritual life has informed on my practice as a healer in a variety of different ways. It's stuff that I have talked about in previous talks, and yet this one is going to be a little different. It's going to be even more so on that, because if not now, then when? You know, we are living in these times of great uncertainty. My last year's spring energy event talk was on dark nights of the soul and what that experience is like. And 2 years ago, it was on grief. And here we find ourselves in a collective dark night of the soul that contains much grief. And so this whole experience, you know, with the virus, with COVID, has been very supernatural for me. Right before it hit, all of a sudden, my practice quadrupled, like overnight. Now, did I do anything to make that happen? Did I advertise? Did I market? Did I post more stuff on social media? I did not. It was like I was getting tapped on the shoulder and being pulled into the game. You know, I imagine God, the universe, in a variety of different faces and outfits. This time, it looked like the guy from Rocky. Was it Mickey, who was Rocky's coach? You know, the grizzly old man. I just felt like Mickey came up and was like, "Yeah, kid, you're getting pulled in the game," you know? And all of a sudden, overnight, that's exactly what happened. And along with that, I was given all of the energy that I needed to be able to be in service at the highest level possible for the longest periods of time, for six days plus per week for almost a month. So that is what happens when we are leading a spiritually based life. We are given what we are needed when we need it, when we are in service to the greater humanity. And I totally believe that this time in all of our lives is exactly what we are being called to do. And David talked about that so beautifully this morning. And so one of the things that you'll find with Spring Energy Event is that throughout the time that we have together, you're going to notice some synchronicities in what all of the speakers are sharing. And people have said to me in previous years, "Well, did you all get together and, you know, decide that this is what you're all going to be talking about?" And I said, "No, none of us have the time for that, first of all, or the wherewithal, frankly, to do it. We're all some pretty, you know, supreme individualists." It happens because we are tuned in to the consciousness of all that is. Because when we are working with energy, we are working with all that is. All that is, all that could ever be. And so I'm thrilled to be able to share with you my own brand of combining of principles, my own integration that came out of me living my life in two different camps. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. So I have created something called Spiritual Freedom Techniques. I'm about 5 or 6 years in, and it involves a series of practices. So I'm going to go over to the slideshow. Let's see how well I do with my screen sharing here. And okay, there we go. So, Spiritual Freedom Techniques, Midwifing the Miraculous. The midwifing is such a key part of what I'm going to be sharing with you all today. It's so important that we get clear about where healing comes from and that we get to be a part of that process, but we are not the process itself. So what is our spiritual freedom techniques? It's a tantra. It's a weaving together. That's just what the word tantra means. It means weaving together. So what I've done is I've combined EFT and other energy balancing tools with spiritual practices and principles. And I felt that that was a very necessary thing that needed to be done. And so I'm going to talk a little bit here about the spiritual principles upon which my practice is founded. And the first one is that we are all connected, not just to one another, but to life itself. And when I was going through this supernatural experience with this resurgence of energy and intuition and prophetic dreams that was happening, it was amazing to me that when the parks were still open, I live in a very urban environment, and so I walk in parks all the time. I felt that connection to all that is more deeply than I'd ever felt it before. I felt one with the trees. I felt one with the grass. I felt one with the sidewalk. I felt one with the other people that were there. That there was this incredible experience of oneness. And as we are connected to that oneness, we're able to affect change in a really powerful way. And so another principle is we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And this is really important because we either think we are one or the other, and we are both. And I'm going to speak more about that later because it's extremely important. God, and when I use the term God here, I want you to just frame it within the higher power of your own understanding. So for you, that may be the higher self, it may be infinite wisdom, it may be something from your religious tradition, okay? I'm talking about the power of life itself in a very impersonal kind of way, that power that right now is causing the daffodils to bloom, that power right now that is budding the trees where I live, that power that is within our thoughts and feelings in every dimension of who we are, that power that exists within all. And I work with my practice in this sort of universal way, because in that way, I'm able to connect and meet clients exactly where they are. So I use the word God. You can substitute anything that feels meaningful or right for you. And if you're someone who's agnostic or an atheist and this isn't really part of your belief system, I'm just going to encourage you to just go along with me on this and see what's here. I work with people of all faiths, including people with no faith whatsoever. And yet sometimes those people without any sense of a higher power at all are the ones that end up being the most moved by the work that we do together. So God is not something separate from us, not outside of us, but an infinite and eternal power that creates all and exists within all. So that's a very important part. If we're not separate from anything or anyone, then we can go places in our work together that with our clients and with our own healing for ourselves that we may not be aware of that we have access to. Principle number four, this one's really important. Everything is healable. Everything. What's healable? Everything. Everything's healable. Everything is healable. Everything. And so that is a very, very important thing that I need to bring in to my practice, into the work that I'm doing with people, because it invites forward the intention of possibility and transformation to happen. It does not matter if that person has stage 4 cancer, if they've been depressed since they were 5, if they have a marriage that's been on the rocks for 20 years, it doesn't matter. Absolutely everything is able to be changed. And this is not a belief that I came to easily. It's something that I came to within a lifetime of experiencing miracles, within a lifetime of seeing things that don't seem healable heal. And so there were times once where I prayed with an older man who had an inoperable brain tumor. And I prayed with him on a Sunday, and on Monday they brought him in to do an x-ray to find out how it had progressed, and it was gone. So that is one of many examples, and I can give a whole bunch, where just incredible shifts have happened. And sometimes we are looking for the miracles, like those big things that happen, and yet the most major shifts have happened inside of me in ways that a lot of people wouldn't really even be able to see. And sometimes they can appear subtle, but are really quite profound. So the next spiritual principle is all healing comes from God. We are the facilitators and filters through which transformation happens. And so I have here in parentheses hollow bones because I want to share a story with you about something that just happened in my practice just a couple of days ago. So a new client found me. This is a Native American shaman. I do not know how this person found me. I send out a pretty extensive client questionnaire, and all of the answers came back with one word or one little phrase responses. I didn't have a lot to go on. The first question is, what do you want to work on? And this person responded, myself. And I thought, yeah, that is what we do, and this works. So I had no idea going into the session what we were going to be working on. And this person was very esoteric. This is someone who lives a spiritually based life. And we did some profound, profound work together. It was just amazing. But I didn't feel any apprehension going into that session with being totally unknown, because I know what power comes within me. And I know that I can meet someone exactly where they are at with whatever they are presenting. I have no fear of that whatsoever. And so I bring that confidence in. And so at the end of her session, you know, she was communicating with her guides while we were working together, and they were offering input into our tapping, which was very interesting. And at the end, she said, oh, they have something to say to you. And I said, oh, well, what's that? And she said, they say that you have hollow bones. And I said, well, what does that mean? And she said, it means that the God force moves through your bones. It's actually in the marrow of who you are. And that's what you bring in your sessions. It's not just in your aura. It's not just in your energy field. It's at the depth of who you are. And so I thought, hollow bones. I love that. What could there be a expression, right, of what we most need at this time? And so I'm going to go back over to sharing my screen again. I apologize for the noise outside, y'all. I live in a place that is incredibly noisy, and I'm doing the best I can. I have all the windows open, all the windows closed, even though it's hot, so I apologize for that. Total non-judgment of clients, their beliefs, feelings, experiences, memories, and cultures. This includes their perpetrators. So I know that I'm operating at a healing consciousness level when I am in this place of absolute non-judgment of anything that my client brings to me. That could be something that they have done to someone else. It could be it could be something from what I would judge as superficial, but in that moment it's not at all, because we all know that pain is the great equalizer. And we also know that these, their beliefs and feelings and experiences that they bring, that in the container of safety that I have created, I have allowed real transformation to happen. And so when I'm in that place, and we all work with people that have experienced trauma, that's what we do. And we certainly have worked with people that have experienced severe trauma. I have worked with people that have experienced what I would even call torture. I mean, some of the worst abuses ever. I know that I'm in the higher consciousness, that when even in those moments, I am not in judgment of the perpetrators, even the perpetrators of this. Because in oneness, there is no other, okay? Life, human life, comes with duality. But when I'm in my practice, I'm in a place where all is welcome. And that is where real healing and transformation can happen. It also enables me to work with people from many different cultures that are that are from all over the map with all different belief systems. I've worked with every religion that you can possibly imagine. Religions and what we think of as religions and things that we don't think of as religions. You know, I've worked with people that have a deep passion and commitment to something, to an interest that is their religion. That is where they frame life. That's where they find meaning within their lives. I've learned a lot of interesting things in all of that. So, to go to the next slide here. How I developed these practices. Well, you have a lifelong spiritual path met with a almost lifelong anxiety problem. So that's where this came out of. And I took two divergent paths and realized that they needed to come together. So I was a very sensitive child, born in a highly insensitive environment. I developed a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms to try to survive within that place. It was extremely difficult. I really resonated when David Gruder shared about his inner world. My inner world became my only safe place. And so that was where books and art and music and things that and writing and things that I could engage in by myself became my life-saving grace. And then when I was 8, I went through testing, and I was taken out of my normal school and put into a school for child geniuses. The problem was, a genius I was not. Intellectually, I was probably at the bottom of the rung there in the range of intellects that were within this program, but I did not have the family support, and I also had some undiagnosed learning disabilities that got in the way of me achieving at a higher level. So I had attention deficit disorder, severe lack of focus, mind bouncing constantly, which made learning quite difficult, as you can imagine. I now really believe I just had a childhood anxiety condition, because when my energy is balanced, most of that ADD symptomology is gone. When I'm grounded, most of that symptomology is gone. I also had an auditory processing disorder. So my ears would hear sound, but my brain had a delay in interpreting what those sounds meant. And so you can imagine that conversation and speaking with people and communicating could be extremely difficult. So throughout my childhood, I constantly said, what? Someone would say something, I would say, what? And in the time that I said, what, my brain would catch up and interpret what the sounds were, and then I'd be able to respond, which made everyone around me furious. But it was, I needed to live with like a 5-second delay. Like, you know, when there's those controversial television programs and they have like a 5-second delay, I needed life to have a 5-second delay for me so that I could catch up to what I was hearing. And so I'm now in this very high pressure, rigorous intellectual environment without the brains or the support or the skills to be able to manage. And I was entering fourth grade, and I ended up, we were doing sixth and seventh grade work. So it was quite a huge jump for me. And I stopped sleeping, like most of the time. I basically was in such fear and anxiety, because here, school was something, the one thing that I was actually fairly good at. I was extremely clumsy and I was not great at lots of other things. But school had been something in which I was doing well. And it was also something in which I was able to get external validation from my family. And along with it, a whole lot of pressure. And so when I got that external validation and now suddenly that was lost, I was in paralyzing fear and terror all of the time. And with no support or help in any kind of way, I am the youngest child of 4, an unexpected child with a big age gap between me and my siblings. I pretty much was left to raise myself. So I was on my own. And so I got up, grew up, I got older, my life became a hot mess in every way that it could possibly be, like what happens with people like me who don't get help. And so I found myself in my mid-20s going through a very traumatic divorce, and I ended up in traditional therapy. And was in traditional therapy for 10 years. And yet outside of that, the seeker in me was believing the little inner voice inside of myself that said that I could be happy. And I wanted to believe and listen to that voice. And so I followed it in a lot of experimentation into anything that I thought would help heal me and help me to feel better. And I became a student of hypnotherapy. And that hypnotherapy teacher ended up introducing me to EFT and to the power of the subconscious mind and to what we call new thought, which is a religious form of metaphysics. So that one person introduced a whole bunch of practices that kind of opened up a whole brand new world for me. And so in that, I was trying to break out of these self-imposed prisons that I had put around myself. When I say that my anxiety was severe, the version in the book is the PG version of it, okay? Because it was much, much, much more serious than the tone of that book would have been appropriate for. I would take the bus, and when I was on the bus, I would go once a week to this restaurant and treat myself to these salads from this one particular restaurant. And every week I would get on the bus, and I'd say, this is the week. This is the week that I'm going to tell the people making my salad that I don't want mushrooms on my salad. And immediately, sweat would begin pouring from my brows and from my armpits, and my heart would be racing and beating out of my chest. And the entire bus ride, I'd have my hands gripped, and I'd say, this is it. This is it. I'm going to do it. I'd try to, you know, psych myself up. I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to tell them that I don't want mushrooms on my salad. And I was never, ever able to do that. To a place that I went to every week, to kind people that worked there, I was never able to simply say, leave the mushrooms off my salad. I remember going to see a movie called 8 Mile, which starred Eminem, the rapper, hip hopper. And in the beginning of that movie, the Eminem, who's playing a fictionalized version of himself, has a panic attack while he's doing a rap battle against another guy. He chokes. I had a panic attack in the theater watching Eminem have a panic attack. So that is how serious the anxiety was. Returning phone calls were impossible. There were opportunities that came my way that I just simply wasn't able to say yes to. And so my party girl life ended up coming into a place of deep contemplation in my early 30s, and I began seriously studying EFT, and I began seriously studying metaphysics. And so I started taking this divergent path that was going in two very seemingly different directions. So on one level, I was leading a deeply spiritual life. I was spending lots of time in prayer and meditation. I was studying metaphysics from, you know, resources that were hundreds of years old. I was spending lots of time on all of the things that we associate with law of attraction now, on manifesting. And all of that came with that, which was a certain internalized pressure to be this uber positive person. Didn't work so well. And so at the same time, though, I realized that I had this serious anxiety condition. And I realized that if I ever wanted to move forward, even in my spiritual life, that that was something that had to be dealt with. And so here I was in the EFT world at the same time, taking classes, tapping on the negative, tapping on the things that weren't working, tapping on the things that were getting in the way, moving into my subconscious, unearthing all of these wounds and blocks. And I had a lot of them, y'all. I had a lot. I have a lot more than anyone should ever have. And while I was on that path, I kept thinking, well, what's the right answer here? You know, is it that I focus on the positive and all of my problems are just going to magically go away and I'm going to be someone who feels safe in her skin and safe in the world? Or am I going to go this direction where I'm dissolving those negative beliefs and patterns and wounds, and then I will have the life that I lead and I will be safe? And what I realized is that it wasn't a either or. It wasn't a but. It was an and. That the humanness and the spirit in me needed both of these journeys. And when I originally started working with people, I'm a spiritual practitioner. And so at my license literally states that all I can do with people is provide spiritual counseling and do a form of prayer called affirmative prayer. That's what my license stipulates. And now I'm working with EFT clients and we're tapping on all of these things that are in the way, right? And I had different price points. I had different business cards. I was literally living with a foot in each world. And out of that, I realized that this was madness. First of all, living this compartmentalized life with a foot in each world was just a way of protecting myself. I had some fear that I was going to be ostracized, criticized. Bringing some of these practices over into the different worlds. And so if I just kept preaching to the converted and living in those two realms, then I didn't have to take any risks. And yet there was an inner calling within me that clearly stated, you have to do this. I got clear messages that I was to work with people of all different faiths. Well, that seemed counterproductive in my spiritual practices. And that terrified me. And now it's so exciting for me. And now I'm an all-faith minister. So I actually speak the language of God with everybody from wherever they're at. So I think I need to go back to sharing the screen. So that's my story. And that's really how this came about. And I realized that there are ways that the EFT world benefits from having spiritual practices, and there's definitely ways that the spiritual world, it could benefit from dealing with our emotions. You know, I work with, we're within different worlds with this, and so there are times when I am speaking at and doing workshops for faith-based communities, and it's very interesting to me that there can be a bias against emotional healing or therapy in those faith-based communities. And of course, it's destroying those faith-based communities from the inside out, okay? That's exactly what happens when we deny and repress our emotional selves. It comes out in some really dysfunctional ways. And so I go in always with some trepidation, always with some fear, and say to them, look, you have to deal with the emotions. I call it emotional hygiene, and I call it emotional alchemy. That's what I share with them. I think alchemy is a word that's kind of easily, can be easily digested by some spiritual communities. And I say we have to work on these things, just like we have a physical body, and we wash our body and we brush our teeth and we eat and we drink water and hopefully we exercise and go to the dentist every now and again. It's important that we also have a system for dealing with our emotional selves. And when I'm working with EFT communities, I'm letting them know that we are working with spirit. We are working with energy. We are working with the foundation of all that has ever existed or will ever exist. And that intuition, where do you think that stuff comes from? It comes from something greater than ourselves. And so we can bring a reverence to our practice as practitioners that enhances the experience for all of us. So we are spiritual beings having a human experience, which is something that you have probably heard of before. Humanness includes a mental, emotional, and physical body that sometimes contains errors, struggles, and pains. These are not separate compartments, but pieces of a greater whole. Our spirits, our souls are perfect, whole, and complete. And so it is imperative that we honor the human experience while we are in it. If we are in bodies, if we are walking around in these meat suits, then we have stuff to work on. Then there's a reason for it. I believe that in such a deep way that there's things that we need to learn in our humanness. And so part of that is going to be learning to deal with our emotions and our beliefs. And so the problem is that when we have a pain, whether it's a mental, emotional, or physical pain, we can get very distracted into believing that that's who we are. You know, our left brains, all they do is focus on problems all the time, right? It's our built-in survival mechanism. And part of working with humanness is understanding that built-in survival mechanism that is going to override your efforts if it believes that anything that you are trying to do is going to make you unsafe. And so when we work with our biology, when we work with our brains, when we work with our nervous system, things work much better. And it's very hard when there are a lot of people out there that are using spirituality to avoid processing their pain. I see this time and time again with people in my life. They experience a major loss of some kind. Maybe they're going through a divorce or a parent dies, and they immediately launch into these spiritual principles and practices, but it's in a way that is bypassing their emotions. And then they wonder why their life's not changing. They wonder why their vision board hasn't showed up. You know, they wonder why they're still struggling with the financial issues. We can't get away from ourselves. And so it's so important that we honor both parts of this experience. Because if we go too further into the human direction, we can lose sight on who we really are. And so when clients come to me, first email, first contact, I already know that they are perfect, whole, and complete. I am just there to help clear away the cobwebs, to get the sticks out of the road, to enable them to feel their own divinity and to feel the unconditional love that they are and the unconditional love that makes up all of who they are, that they are safe, that they are loved. And when we feel that, when I was able to feel God's love for me, it changed everything. You know, up until that point, all spiritual teachings, all religious teachings, everything that I had done were just exercises in mental ideas. It wasn't actually real for me until I actually felt it. And after that, that became my mission to help people to be able to feel that in whatever way that they can. So spiritual mind, spiritual freedom techniques combines EFT and energy balancers with prayer. When we are seeking prayer, there's a lot of reasons for it. Some people just do prayer out of habit. Some people will do repetitions of prayers to get into an altered state. That's what happens when people pray the rosary or they do mala beads. Okay. We also do prayers of thanks, hopefully. But most of the time when we are praying, it's because we're looking for something. We have a problem and we need to fix. We have a pain and we want it to go away. We have a need and we're looking for that need to be met. When we bring our anxiety into the prayer process, it's much more difficult to be able to feel the transformation that comes from that. From that we want to have happen when we pray well. You know, when we pray well, we feel differently from before we did it than after we did it. And so using EFT, it sounds so simple, right? But tapping on the problem, tapping on the doubts that you have that the problem can actually even be fixed is a big one, okay? Because a lot of times we turn to prayer and we don't actually even believe that that thing can be healed. I do some very simple things to calm triple warmer, to calm the triple heater meridian. If you're not familiar with that, it controls the fight, flight, or freeze response from a traditional Chinese medicine perspective. And I do a very simple technique that I share in my book, and I'm going to share it with you right now because it shifts the nervous system very quickly. So you're going to take a hand, you're going to bring it up to your face, And it's called the shush technique. So imagine you're shushing somebody, but instead you're going to turn the finger and you're going to press it in under the nose, across the lips, and down the chin. Most of the time when people do this, they don't really press in enough. You got to kind of flatten your face with the finger, okay? And then I like to take my thumb and my fingers and kind of wrap them on both sides of my chin. If you're good with an eyebrow like Elvis, you can make it look like you're thinking about something very deeply. This is a very simple practice. So just hold this and breathe, everybody. Hold it and breathe. I'm not going to do it too firmly and I'm going to screw up my lipstick, but you get the gist. And breathe. And this shifts the nervous system really quickly. And I learned this from Beth Sorger, who I know is on the call. You know, I just got a chance to share it with a wider circle of people. Isn't this amazing that we have this community that comes together sharing these practices? We're part of a four-part co-mentoring group, and we bring a lot of stuff to it. And this is one of those things that's been a deal changer for me. Something that simple prior to going into a prayer is going to make a huge difference. I got to go back to sharing my screen. My time is going. Another way that I do this is with meditation. The verdict is in that meditation is good for us, okay? They teach it at Harvard. It's a very widely accepted. And when I speak of meditation here, I'm not talking about guided visualization. I'm talking about that going into the space between the thoughts. Well, the problem is that if every time you close your eyes, all you're doing is hearing those racing thoughts, then they can be very problematic for us. It's not such a relaxing experience. And so I developed something called the welcoming meditation. And the purpose of it is to welcome the thoughts and to tap on the EFT points and then go back into a very simple breathing technique, which is breathing into a count of four and breathing out to a count of four. And in that way, very quickly, we get to increase the spaciousness and actually get the benefit from our meditation practice. I use EFT and energy balances with several different manifestation processes. And it's because the humanness is left out of the manifestation process. You know, you have doubts and fears about something working, it's not going to manifest. And so I have different practices for releasing the doubts and fears that enable us to manifest much more quickly. Forgiveness work. So from a religious standpoint, forgiveness is like a grace that you bestow upon another person. You're just going to take the high road and you're going to kind of let them off of the hook. Well, it doesn't work very well if the hurt or the wound has not been neutralized. The deal is if you're in a human body, you will hurt others and you will be hurt. Even those of us who try so hard not to hurt others end up hurting others anyway. It's part of the human experience. And so it's imperative for our health and well-being that we learn to forgive effectively. The problem is we can't just mentally override the pain. And so with spiritual freedom techniques, we neutralize the original wound and then we bring in forgiveness practices. Next is shadow work. This is probably the most fulfilling part of my entire spiritual journey and what I do with others and what I teach others. We all have darkness within us. It's the yin and the yang, you know, it's the masculine and the divine feminine, and both aspects of that, those energy systems come with darkness. And that darkness often comes from a misplaced way of trying to be loved. Some of the things that I have done in my life in order to try to be loved. Oh, the trouble it has gotten me into. And the times where I have projected my own faults, my own inadequacies, my own insecurities onto other people that has interfered with my relationships. When we use energy work to spiritual practices of shadow processing, it changes everything. Your enemies become friends. You're able to own more of your light. You're able to share your vulnerabilities from a place that's so incredibly empowering. And it frees you. It frees you from having to be perfect, which a lot of people in spiritual communities get locked into. I find it a lot when I'm working with, you know, I'm not calling out different belief systems, but when I work with people that are Mormon, there's this enormous pressure inside of them to be these perfect beings. And it leads to so much emotional repression that turns into disease and a lot of other things. Okay, so the next one's a little controversial, and it's processes to heal offensive energies. And I put that in quotation marks. I'm borrowing this terminology from Dr. Bradley Nelson, who created the body code. Listen, there are things that happen in our EFT practices, and they can look like things that are called curses, entities, vows. I could go on. I don't like using those terminologies. I find them superstitious and fraught with a lot of fear. The deal is that all of us are very bad at managing our energy unless someone teaches us how. And there are times that we have strong feelings towards others and other people have strong feelings towards us that show up in our energy field in a variety of destructive ways. Now, when I'm working with something and something comes up that looks like a curse, is that there because they believe that they were cursed? Maybe. It doesn't make a difference where it came from. I am strictly there to work with what is presented to me. But I will say this, this is not something to do without training, and it's certainly not something to do on your own. You need to go into this with a huge amount of spiritual support. And so take the superstition out and strictly look at it from an energy perspective, that there are things in our field that need to be released and that the way of doing it is through spiritual practices. And the last but not least is working with deities. Does it matter what the deities are that my clients are part of their spiritual life? No, it doesn't matter to me whatsoever. I'm working with whatever they bring to me. I have my own deities. I describe spiritual principles to you all that have an impersonal feel to them, and that's the foundation. But my life is filled with the deepest personal and intimate relationships with those that that support me in who I am and in my work. And so I do this with this too. Is there anything else? Benefits to having spirituality practice? Because I have my screen, I don't know how much time I have, so I better go through this quickly. Benefits to having spirituality in your practice. You're not alone. You're not alone anyway, but it's pretty nice if you know that you're not alone so that you're going into your practice and your sessions knowing that you're supported in a powerful way. Clients feel supported in the deepest way possible. It's beyond what you are able to provide from yourself. If they leave feeling loved in a deep, deep way, that is going to stick with them in between sessions and when they leave your practice.
That's what we're going to do, Ms. Chris. We are feeling deeply loved by you, and we are going to leave you feeling that way, and we're going to take all this with us. And I am charged today with the unhappy duty of keeping us on track. This is the book, just so you know, Energy Healing by Chris Ferraro. And by the way, Barbara Nagpal just won it. And moving right along, because I'm going to